Welcome back to Geek Show Help Desk.
Hey. Guess what? Guess what? I'm back, baby. I'm so happy.
Were you gone last week?
Did you decide to?
You know what, Jaren? That was hurtful and mean, and I did not enjoy it.
I know Owen was gone last week, and James covered for him.
Yeah.
And Squinky was here. Oh, wait, you weren't here.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even notice.
That was happening.
Of course, I wasn't here, but I didn't notice.
I listened to the show, too, I'll have you know. It was an okay show. The in-between was extra good, by the way.
Wow, that was a spicy one.
It was.
James brought the heat there.
Very spicy.
I, you know what? I'm super glad for that. Thank you, James, bringing the heat when I'm not
it
in there.
It was like a sticky heat. Anyway, this is the Geek Show Help Desk, where we talk about tech gadgets and sciencey type things that we enjoy. What is that noise? What is going on? I heard a crunch, crunch.
Oh, that was my sunglasses.
Okay.
So he keeps doing it.
Should stop that.
Sorry.
Let's go ahead and introduce the panelists. He's the noisy one. He's Lando.
It's Lando. I'm back. I'm happy to be back. I'm sorry I missed last week, but also not sorry at the same time. I was watching baseball, which is my favorite pastime, and I'm very happy about that.
Skipped out on the podcast for baseball.
Baseball with the family, so it was a family event. Anyway, okay. I'm Lando. That's me. I'm here and also on the other show, the arcade one.
The arcade one. All right. Hey, it's Owen's back this week, too.
Back again. Life. Yeah. I fell off the roller coaster of life, and I landed in the seat right in front of here, in front of this camera.
Ta-da.
And microphone. So you can catch me here, or you can catch me on the Geek Show Arcade, where you'll also get some more of me, which is what I know you want.
Everyone wants a little more.
I want that, for sure.
And we got Jaren, whom everyone wants some of also
debatable.
No, I find people can stand me in maybe 1 hour increments.
Everybody wants him to sign the check. That's what they want.
That's why people talk to me at work.
See?
Yep.
Go figure.
Huh. And we have a host, Tony.
Hey, you're going to get just the right amount of me. No more, no less. Check me out on Twitter at QuadTTony. On Geek Show Arcade and Geek Show Live on Saturdays. All right. Let's see. Oh, do we have any emails this week?
Yeah.
Email.
Very nice.
We have the emails last week, but can't remember what they were.
I have an email from Cody Taylor. He says, in recent weeks, I've observed that my AirPods Pro Gen 2 no longer have a noticeable distinction between the transparency and noise cancellation modes. Wah, wah. Regrettably, my AppleCare has just expired. Despite researching online tips, I remain uncertain about the potential fixes available without AppleCare coverage. I'm seeking a second opinion. Mr. Conover might have the answer, but perhaps Jaren or Tony could offer some insights that Lambo doesn't have.
If you're at a warranty, you are just out of luck, my friend, and I apologize. I wish I had a better answer for you. I really do, but I've dealt with that before. I had a first gen of AirPods Pro, and then just, you know, right before they went on warranty, one of them started crackling. I got one of them replaced. Awesome. And then 3 months later, after the warranty was up, the other one started doing the same thing.
You know what I really like about electronics in the EU is they make them have a 2-year warranty. That's like a mandate in the EU, if I remember correctly. That would be nice.
Which is about the time it takes for wireless earbuds to lose all their battery.
Well, there you go. I would say I have 2 suggestions. I don't know if they'll help or if you've already tried them. Try resetting the AirPod Pros. I think there's a way to do that. I feel like I've had to do it before, so check that out. And then secondly, make sure that you're switching between noise canceling and transparent and not noise canceling and adaptive. Because they have a new adaptive setting as of a few months ago, 6 months ago or so, where it lets in a lot of other noise that it doesn't deem as background noise. And so that's like the setting I use when I'm at the gym. So it doesn't let in a lot of the just kind of background noise of the fans and the garbage music they play. But still, if someone talks to me, their voice comes through clearly. So double check that and make sure you're actually switching between the noise canceling and the transparent mode. But
to reset
Oh, you have that
info? I do.
Nice.
And to reset your AirPods, put them in the case, close the lid, wait 30 seconds, open the lid, and then press and hold that setup button on the back for about 15 seconds until it turns, flashes amber, and then white.
There you go. So give those a shot if you haven't already.
Good Googling, Jaron.
If that is no good, then yeah, sorry, man. That's how it goes with
that's the way tiny the Apple rolls. Electronics.
So
that's how every company rolls, unfortunately.
I was gonna say that's not just the Apple thing. That's
but let's take this moment to blame Apple. I mean, we don't get a lot of the we do, but I also like to do it now.
I gotta say, mine haven't stopped working, knock on wood, and they are my favorite just general use earbuds by far, hands down. They're just fantastic. So
my first gen, I luckily traded them in at Best Buy for the new ones, but yeah, the battery was like it lasted 10 minutes by the time I was done with them.
Traded in broken ones.
No, they said all it has to just power on and that's it. And so I showed them it powered on. And it's their problem.
That's what I'm talking about.
Way to screw Best Buy, Jaron. Good on you.
Hey, I follow the rules. It's up to them.
That's right. Okay. Well, there you go. Thanks for writing in, Cody. Anything else, Jaron? Any other emails?
No.
Okay. No. Well, let's move on to the stories then. Got a lot of energy today because I exercised in the afternoon and had a big scoop of pre-workout. Woo! let's look. Okay, this is very exciting for me, even though it also is very sad because it means I'm probably going to have to spend some more money. But Creality announced a new printer, a new printer in the K line, the K2 Plus.
I thought yours just came out, didn't it?
The K1 Max, I waited like 6 or 8 months before I bought it because I wanted to make sure it actually, you know, had the kinks worked out. So the K2 Plus looks just absolutely fantastic. It's a larger print volume than even the K1 Max. So the K1 Max is 300 millimeter by 300 millimeter by 300 millimeter. And this one's 350 all around. You can print really big stuff with this.
It's a lot of millimeters.
And then they also are introducing a multi-filament system that you can do either different filament types or different filament colors during your print automatically. It's just baked into the G-code. If you use, you know, if you slice it correctly, really, really cool. They haven't released for sure the rest of the specs. I see a lot of rumors online, but I don't really want to report on them because I don't know for sure if that's the case. So there will be a follow-up story next week talking about or the week after, whenever they actually, announce the old specs there, but. They haven't announced a price either. This was basically just a thing that says, hey, in April, I believe it's, July, they're going to have this out for sale.
So it's like a teaser for a trailer.
It's a teaser for a trailer, not an extra teaser. But it looks pretty rad. I'm assuming that they're going to have some really competitive specs on there. Because that's just how they've been with the K series. And then pricing, though, that's a huge question mark. I'm betting fully kitted out, it's going to be $1,200 or $1,300. That's what I'm betting because they're trying to compete in the Bamboo X1C market with the quality of the machine and the multi-filament, case, and that I think that runs about $1,300 when you buy it as a combo. So I bet they're not going to go much higher than that, if higher at all. So we'll see. It's really cool looking, and I can't wait to see what happens. And I might end up having two giant printers at my house. We'll see.
I thought you already had two. You mean three?
Two giant working printers at my house. When I say working, I just mean plugged in.
okay.
What a definition.
So very cool. Very excited to see what happens with that. Let's see. Now let's talk about Apple making a pretty cool move here on the App Store.
Yeah, competition turns out it does help. And
can you believe it?
I have the story for the other show, Jaren.
What other show?
Yeah, this is an arcade. This is definitely an arcade story.
No, it's more about policy, which I feel is App Store stuff.
But it's about games.
Whatever. Anyway, because Apple has to compete with different app stores, they're opening up to different types of apps.
For the record, Lando, I agree with you on this.
Thank you. I don't want to be docked points, okay?
No demerits for Lando.
Thank you.
No demerits for Jaren either because he brought stories.
Yeah, I always bring stories. Well, anyway, they are saying that you can have super apps now, kind of. And what a super app is, it's an app that runs other apps, but it's not really that kind of. For super apps, they're saying it has to be like HTML5 type stuff within the app itself.
I thought a super app would be something like an actual app for streaming Xbox Cloud stuff.
That too.
That's a super app.
Okay. Yeah, that would also fit that definition, as well as emulators.
Which is crazy to me because I thought for sure Apple would be like, nah, we don't want to do anything that might support the possibility of piracy because
they're not going to do that. There's no way. What they will probably do with emulators is allow companies like Sega to have like the Sega Genesis Classics app distributed. Mm-hmm. Where you can buy this on Steam and the consoles, yeah. Where you download one app and you have access to like 30 different Sega ROMs, you know, because Sega owns the rights to those ROMs. I would be super surprised if they just allowed any old emulator in there where you could load up ROMs yourself. They are not very specific on that, but
here's what they say. These apps, like the emulators, must comply with quote-unquote all applicable laws, an indication that it will ban apps that provide pirated titles. So, like, they haven't come out and said they're going to ban it.
Well, here's
let's
the
be
thing.
Fair. They're going to.
The emulator doesn't provide the titles. It provides the ability to run a file. The pirated title comes from someone moving it over to their phone.
But without sideloading, how do you do that? So
direct
essentially,
download. Just a direct download.
Yeah, like link to a Google Drive or something like that.
Right,
yeah.
True.
Tell that to Yuzu, though. They didn't provide any direct links to ROMs.
The problem with Yuzu, in my limited knowledge of it, is because they had a Patreon that they were making $20,000 a month on.
That'd do it.
And Nintendo said, oh, you're making money on facilitating the possibility of piracy. And I think that's where they... And you know what? Talking about that, I think the emulator community owes a big thank you to Yuzu for settling with Nintendo and not letting that case go to court. Because if it went to court, there's a very high possibility that a precedent could have been set based on the ruling that would give Nintendo or anyone the ability to go after more emulators based on that precedent. And so Yuzu, by settling for that $2.4 million or whatever, did a huge favor for the emulation community.
Big time.
Yeah. So this is brand new. We'll see how long it takes for the first emulator apps to show up.
Yeah.
But I would, like I said, I'd be extremely surprised if we could just get like RetroArch on there and be able to link to your own ROMs. That's just not going to happen.
I just how would they stop it?
They wouldn't approval allow process. The app to be approved to be distributed in
so
their
they
app
would,
store.
You think they would actually fine tooth comb all the?
Oh yeah.
Oh okay.
They already do. Right.
No, I do not believe it for a second. There's no way they fine tooth comb every app that's submitted. I'm sure it's an automated process that just looks for red flags and then sends it along its way.
I'm sure. So, you know, there's those people out there that still make ROMs for older systems. I bet apps like that distribute those would probably be allowed. But
that would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. There's going to be a lot of fallout from this in several directions. It'll be fun to follow.
Yeah, so those who are against all this European regulation, it just shows competition's good. It opens up things that weren't open before because it's competition.
Well, and that's the thing. If there's lots of different kinds of regulation, and if the regulation forces more competition, then I'm usually all for it.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah, I mean, not all of the EU regulations are great, but
right. That's what I'm saying. You have to
this
look at
one,
each
in particular, I think it definitely has helped. Right.
For sure. For sure.
And for sure, going after those business practices that limit, that try and lock consumers in. They do that really well over there. So, like the USB-C stuff, all that. So, that's what I like them for. I like them for that, the EU.
That's what I appreciate about you.
As long as USB-C is the de facto standard forever. Yeah. Imagine if they did that with USB-A like decades ago.
Yeah.
And we would still be using USB-A on phones and everything. That wouldn't be great.
That wouldn't have been great, right?
Yeah. So I think that's an example where their regulation isn't particularly good. But they gave us USB-C on iPhones, so that makes me happy.
Yeah.
In the short term.
Indeed, indeed. Let's see. Let's talk about time travel. Yeah, good segue right there.
this is pretty cool. Astrophysicist claims he has cracked the equation for time travel. Of course, there's a huge catch. So this guy named Ronald Mollett, there's a big old backstory here. Basically, it's kind of like time, like Back to the Future. That's the movie I'm thinking of, where something happens, right? Doc hits his head. This guy saw his father die early when he was 10 years old of a heart attack. He's like thinking, I want to invent time travel. So he's been like spending his entire life on figuring out how to do time travel. And he claims to have figured out the equation to do this. Basically, the way this works is you have an intense and continuous rotating beam of light that creates a whirlpool, if you will, in time. And that's what make time travel possible.
Really?
However,
a laser pen that you just swirl around, that's it?
I got one of those.
Yeah, that's it. Just that simple.
I'm surprised
they
haven't
giant,
made time travel
huge
with
huge one
with
requiring galactic amounts of energy. And at scale, to make it work, is still kind of unknown. So it's like one of those things like, yeah, I think I figured it out, but it requires so much energy to try and test and prove that I don't know. Anyway, I read through this whole story and I'm like, okay, cool. Maybe time travel is actually possible.
Galactic amounts of energy.
Right.
What was that movie? Wasn't there a movie like this that did this? It could shoot the future? Paycheck. Ben Affleck. Remember that? Shoots around the world. Travels around the world in a loop and then sees the future because it's... There you go.
Anyway, it's just cool. Based on Einstein's principles of relativity, those theories and equations, he built his own. And says time travel is possible. So,
and
we'll get to be seen because we still haven't seen anybody, you know, appear from the future now.
And it can't be proved because we don't have those galactic amounts of energy. Just like the Albuquerque drive, the warp drive,
Right?
The one that floats space in front
and like
of
I said, the biggest proof to me is no one's popping back right now because
that we know of. So
that's fair.
So the thing that interests me so much about time travel, other than just the science fiction, you know, nerd aspect of it, is you know, if it is possible, I feel like unless you ascribe to the many universe theory, where each decision you make creates a branch universe. In that case, time travel would be fine because it would just create another branch universe.
I don't think that makes sense.
But like I said, if you ascribe to
that. Yeah.
But the other one is like if that's not the case and there's only one universe, then time travel would have to be something that was invented by accident for it to actually work. Because if time travel is ever invented for a reason to go back and change something, as soon as you go back and change it, you will have removed the reason to create the time travel.
Oh, like Back to the Future.
Exactly. Yeah.
What if you could only travel into the future?
That's another thing, you know? Well, I mean, we're technically time traveling into the future right now.
Right, right.
Just
so
at
like,
a one-to-one ratio.
So really, a good time machine would be to find out how to preserve the human body and pause your consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's just what happened to Fry.
Yeah.
Futurama.
Yeah, you time travel to the future.
Yeah, it's...
Whoa. If time is our perception, and you freeze your perception, and time keeps moving,
you've technically time traveled.
Yeah.
You're blowing my dang mind right here right now.
Put yourself into a coma, and bam, you've time traveled. Unfortunately, your body is H2, but...
No. If it's not a... I mean, if it's just you're going by normal coma... medical technology reasoning, but
yeah.
What was the other one I was going to say? I forgot. Oh well, time travel—it's crazy stuff. I love talking about it. All right, you know what else I love talking about? Advances in computer chips, and maybe we're wrong about ARM on Windows. Microsoft sure seems to think so, and that the ARM computer chips coming up for Windows are actually going to be good combined with their software.
There is going to be a big announcement in May from Microsoft about their new stuff. And was it last week or the week before? We were disappointed with the recent Surface laptops out there. We were saying how the Surface laptops used to be cool, and now they're just kind of boring old hat. This might be why. They might be saving all their big guns until they can finally have a good Windows on ARM OS. We will see. But there's been internal documents that The Verge has seen and have been verified by The Verge.
We saw this and we verify it.
The Verge, they like to say they're legit, so I don't think they would just say...
They're pretty legit. I wouldn't doubt them too much.
Yeah. They say that these new Windows AI PCs, they're calling them AI PCs for some reason, will have faster app emulation than Rosetta 2.
That's a bold statement.
That's a really bold statement. Which is the compatibility layer that Apple uses on its Apple Silicon, which was amazing when it came out. It still is, but it's just not really needed as much anymore because most devs out there have ported their apps to ARM.
For Mac OS.
I think comparing Mac OS to Windows, though, isn't too... is like apples and oranges because unlike
No, it's
Mac,
apples and Windows.
Yeah. What was that?
Is it Tinny still?
Oh, yeah.
I like the joke.
It's really bad, Owen. Anyway,
you might need to reload.
Unlike Mac, Windows apps, an app that was created like 20 years ago, you can still get working on Windows today.
Right, yeah. There's sometimes some hoops you have to jump through, but it's almost always doable.
Yeah, yeah. And having a solid compatibility layer is just so necessary for anything Windows because you have those decades of applications, which a lot of them aren't maintained anymore, but they still work because it works on Windows. Yes, Lando?
I have a question. So if just hypothetically speaking, if Windows does move over to the ARM architecture, does that mean for game developers that'd be easier to develop games for both Mac and PC now that they're on the same similar architecture? Or is it still comparing Windows and Apples?
At first, I thought maybe, but then I thought no, because Windows and Mac OS were on x86 for a long time at the same time.
That's fair.
You know, and it never made a difference for that. Hey, Owen, welcome back.
Yeah, and Windows just has a lot more game development tools that Mac doesn't have. Like,
yeah.
Well, I feel like
DirectX is really mature.
You have DirectX, you have Vulkan, you know, you have several different APIs that are just... already supported.
Well, Vulkan does Windows. Work on Mac.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Well, there's a lot of, I know a lot of game engines allow for cross-platform development, right? You can deploy to both platforms if you want. Right? Yeah. Isn't that true? Saying true things.
It's kind of true, but it's not nearly as simple as just like, okay, compile this for Windows, compile this for Mac. There's a lot of fine tuning and whatnot that's going to have to go into
it. Of course, but it's generally speaking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that if someone wanted to put more effort into that for a game engine, it would definitely be doable.
Oh, I'll get right on it. No problem.
Yeah, work on that. Oh, too bad Epic isn't on very good terms with Apple, with Unreal Engine.
Everyone's going to have to use that other less great engine, Unity, to make stuff Unity. For Apple.
I think UE does work on Mac, but
it does.
I'm not sure how much they're prioritizing like UE5 stuff on that, though. Anyway, so Microsoft is apparently claiming that the new Snapdragon X Elite with the new Windows on ARM compatibility layer will beat Apple's M3 MacBook Airs. They were specific about MacBook Air, which doesn't include the M3 Max, M3 Pro chips.
Right.
So not sure if they can, if Qualcomm can scale that up to really take on Apple in every market here, but a lot of questions remain. It's just exciting that this is a possibility.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm keeping the dream alive of a fully NVIDIA SoC handheld or laptop, man.
Or even desktop, fully NVIDIA.
Think about that. You know,
man, we're such NVIDIA fanboys.
We're such NVIDIA
fanboys. You really are. It's kind of annoying, actually.
Tony really is.
They do more for pushing graphics technology than any other company out there. That's why I love
them. And the craziest part about it is they don't really have any competition to keep them pushing it. It's just they do it, you know?
Yeah. And rumors are RDNA 4 isn't going to be that great of an upgrade. Yeah.
Dang it, AMD. All right. Well, anyway, can't wait to see what happens with the ARM stuff on Windows. So next up, let's talk about Google MiFi. Find my Google finally is doing the same thing that Apple has already done.
Oh, finally. I can't believe it. Apple's had this feature forever.
Like two whole years.
I can
man.
See why you guys like saying that. That felt really good.
Doesn't it?
Feels great. Yeah.
So their Find My Device network was officially launched this week, and it basically does the same thing that Apple's Find My stuff.
Just Apple's done it forever, and Android's finally catching up.
Is it the same level? Like, can you lock your device and all the things with Find My?
I think you could already,
had Find My for a
you
long
could,
time.
You could already do that with a phone. I'm talking about the AirTag style clippy things. So the way that enhanced is now you have, you know, somewhat billion and something devices now that you can use as the network that will pick up those chips throughout the world, wherever you're at.
Is it a billion, though? Like, how are they pushing these updates out to all the Android phones? Because, as we know, many manufacturers are famous for not updating their OSs. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be, like, a required update that pushes through the Google Play Store?
That is a good question.
I bet you they guarantee it on Pixel devices, but other than that, you have to go get it.
Well,
then it wouldn't be a billion devices that they're claiming.
Ever since... forever ago when Google separated a lot of its apps from its OS updates, it would be pretty easy for them to just push an automatic update to the app, even if it's a background app that isn't used that much. So, I mean, I'm sure you could tell it to not update if you wanted to, but, you know, why? You're already being tracked anyway. You might as well help someone else with their tracking.
So they say it works on devices running Android 9 and above, which came out in 2018.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
So it sounds like it is just an update from the Google Play Store.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope they've learned their lessons in safety that Apple AirTags took a while to do. You know, the first when Apple AirTags hit the market,
people were using them nefariously.
To stalk people, to steal cars, and now... And now the AirTags will alert you or your iPhone will alert you if an AirTag is traveling with you that's not yours. So.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like.
I hope they come up with that standard.
If you can opt out of this. Like, do you just wake up with a new app on your phone that you didn't request? Very curious about this.
That's what I meant by service.
Apple did that first too. Didn't they drop an album on people's.
Yeah, from U2.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
People freaked yeah, out. They did true. Not want that free U2 album.
I guess any OS update you get from Apple, you have a possibility of having a new app on there.
Exactly.
That you didn't want.
Yeah. Yep. Nobody likes Bono anymore, apparently.
Jeez. Catch up, Android.
Apple's
been doing this for years.
Bono takes too huge of craps, and nobody likes that anymore.
It is his.
That was a South Park reference for those of you that watch South Park.
It is his icon. The shadow, the original shadow for the AirPod is Bono. That person with the shadow.
Is that Bono?
That's Bono.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting. Huh.
Look that up.
I
don't want to be from wrong.
I really like those ads.
All right. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that thingy where the sun went away for a few minutes this week.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So unless you were, you know, living underneath a rock for some reason, this last week a solar eclipse happened in the U.S.
Or clouds. If you live underneath clouds.
Maybe you live underneath clouds.
Or in a house.
Which, you know, everyone's talking about. And, you know, it was super cool and all that kind of stuff. However, I've kind of been keeping my eye out for a story that I thought was podcast worthy about this, and I found one. So I found this to be really interesting. So during the solar eclipse, the power grid, power reduction for the east of the United States, so east of Mississippi, basically.
Mm-hmm. Most of the
they
totality was.
Saw a 93% reduction in some areas when the sun was blocked in power generation. That is how reliant we are on solar energy at this point.
So
is during that time, they saw huge reductions in energy.
Was this ever a question? Because we have night every night where there's no sun.
Where there's zero sun.
And so, I would think they would draw the same conclusion.
He meant to say during the day. That's how reliant we are on daytime light.
Daytime light, yeah.
Daytime. You're just trying to be a jerk, Tony.
I was just. Did they mention this in the article at all? Like
a lot of the kids here in Utah all had indoor recess today to stop them from burning their retinas out. So
you're not allowed to go outside because you're going to look at the sun. We all know it.
We've told you no, but we're not letting you out there. You're not burning your retinas on our watch.
Bunch of tiny Trumps out there. Tony.
Okay. Tony. Okay. You're not wrong. You're not wrong, Tony.
Okay.
But what this highlights is, you know, not only do we need to focus on renewable energy solutions, but renewable storage solutions.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and we say this all the time. There's no silver bullet, and solar isn't the silver bullet. Wind isn't the silver bullet. It's going to be a combination of all of those things. And we absolutely have to have energy storage solutions because if there's no wind for a while or a week of rain, you know, we're screwed.
I still like that idea that they were kicking around about using old mine shafts for
energy gravity, elevators.
Gravity batteries. Plenty of those in Utah. I wonder, you know.
So I think that the interesting part to me was just how much power we needed to make up for during those 4 minutes of totality.
For sure.
Across the nation. Like, I just thought that was fascinating, right?
That is crazy. 93%.
It's probably more than just the 4 minutes.
And this was in Texas, too. That 93% comes from Texas.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
A lot of solar in Texas, huh?
Apparently so. Surprising, right? Tony's reading. Real-time reading.
That doesn't sound right. I don't think Texas. So it's a 93% power reduction in just the solar stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't affect their grid all as a whole because
not the entire grid.
They've a got small coal percentage.
Fire. They got
their
coal fire plants.
So
they got water.
So it says
plants.
Here in the article, Tony. Okay, Tony, Mr.
I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just being specific.
Peak power production is expected to reach 71% within the eastern power grid and 45% in the western grid.
Of pure solar?
No, peak power reduction. It says peak power reduction. Total peak. 71% within the eastern power grid and 45% in the western grid.
Yeah, because of the
that makes
sense. The way the sun moved across. Did you guys go out and look at it?
I did not. I missed
it. I looked at it through the... You know, this was actually pretty cool. In my office, our blinds have little holes in them for whatever reason.
So you could see it.
So we put a piece of paper up next to the blinds and could see the shadow through the holes of the eclipse. In fact, it was actually the coolest way I've ever watched an eclipse, to be honest with you.
I used binoculars.
Very nice.
Just the sunlight right in your retinas.
With the filter, right?
Well, it's a sunlight filter.
Okay.
Oh, good. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. I saw a sunspot. It was cool.
Yeah. So they had all those little paper eclipse glasses that have been on sale like crazy for the last month or two. And I finally realized why they were on sale.
They're fake.
Did they not be standards?
No. The ones there was one or two out there that got busted for that, but they're on sale because there's not going to be another eclipse go over the U.S. for 20 years.
2044, baby.
Yeah, so they're just like, hey, we got to sell all of these. Yeah. We don't want to have them sitting in a warehouse for 20 years. But yeah, I bought a 10-pack for $7
3
weeks ago.
So you can store them in your basement.
I'm going to store them in a drawer for 20 years now.
You know, there's a guy that I listen to on NPR, and he is a solar eclipse chaser. He has seen dozens of solar eclipses around the Earth.
They're actually not all that rare.
Yeah, no. He's like, I mean, they're of course not. Like this, the moon passes in front of the sun.
It has to line up just right because the plane and the nodes and all the things have to line up just right. It's like about every 18 months there's an eclipse.
Yeah, but
it's not always total.
Exactly. It's rare for the totality ones because not only does the moon have to move in front of in between the sun and the earth at the right,
at the focal point of the shadow.
X-axis, but it also has to move in the right Y or Z or whatever. You know, it has to be the right distance from
the earth.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I read somewhere on Twitter, so I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it makes sense, that we have a 1 in a trillion chance for our moon to be the exact same size as our sun from how we perceive it on Earth.
1 in a trillion? That sounds too high.
Have you seen the universe?
But, you know, the solar eclipses, like totality ones, to where
it's better odds
the same
than
size.
Where the moon is the exact same size as we perceive it.
What are those odds again?
One in a trillion.
Okay, so better than Powerball still, so.
Did you let that guy in Oregon that won last week? 1.6.
Yeah, 1.3 billion.
Bill. Jeez.
Billion.
You know how many sunglasses you could buy with $1.3 billion?
You know warehouses of sunglasses you could buy? Many.
Many. So, yeah, it was interesting. I went out and checked it out. We only got 50% in Utah, but it was still cool to see. What was the other thing? I don't remember. Full self-driving review from Jaren. That's what we're going to talk about next. Left-hand turn into nowhere.
Tesla is doing a one-month free trial for the full self-driving beta on all Teslas that have the hardware capable of doing it. So I've been giving that a whirl the past couple of weeks here and wanted to review it on the show. It's been an interesting time. The first time I did it, I was absolutely terrified. I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know why I was doing certain things or like how it would react. And so my foot was hovering the brake pedal. As soon as you hit the brake or the accelerator or move the steering wheel, you take control back. So you're always in control if you need to be, and you should, because I would call full self-driving probably good 98% of the time.
Well, that's good enough. That's an A.
2% is not okay.
It's fine.
Like it's like being an airline pilot. Like you can't be okay. You can't make 90% of your landings and still be a good airline pilot.
Like, yeah. So you know how timid drivers are scarier than
assertive
drivers?
Yeah.
Full self-driving feels like a timid driver who's trying to be assertive.
Ah, so like you become like a driver's ed instructor.
Yeah. So it's terrifying mostly because of that. It does a lot shockingly much better than I thought it would. Like
that's cool.
I've turned left on a major street onto another major street, and it waited for all the cars to pass. It's a little bit more conservative than I would have liked. I had cars behind me. Like, is it going or should I just take over? You know. So it handles left turns pretty well. I mean, I haven't done a left turn from a place where there isn't a stoplight, you know, like a straight left turn from stopping and you're not in the middle of an intersection.
Should just do a left turn at the top of the street you live on. That's a perfect opportunity.
Oh, right. Perfect opportunity to die. Yes. I
mean, for science. I mean,
it's, yeah.
For science.
Visibility at the top of my street is like
terrible.
Horrible. Yeah. Yeah.
I've so, died there. I almost died there many times when we were recording your house.
Every time I come over to your place times. and I leave, I think all the deities that I'm turning right out of that street.
Yeah. There's, we just don't turn left on that street ever. We go a different way. Anyway, so yeah, when you turn out a stop sign, it stops, complete stop, like
no movement forward.
Yes,
done.
And then it inches forward, stops again, inches a little bit more, stops again, and then it goes for like a turn right. So yeah, it's very, very cautious, which at this stage I think I'd prefer over overly assertive. I've had it take me up the mountains and back. I've taken it to Moab and back, which is like a three to four hour drive. And like I said, most of the time it did just great. But
did great on our excursion up to Draper to get Astro Burger.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. Merging on the freeway. It wasn't a packed freeway at the time, but it did well.
But were you guys like two cats in a rocking chair store? Like, were you guys just like waiting, like? To take back control.
I thought I was a better driver than Jaren, so I felt good.
Oh, bull crap! You don't know that. Coming back from Draper to Lehi, we were turning left to get onto the on ramp, and it just totally chose. It changed lanes right in the middle.
In the middle of the turn
of the intersection, and
oh no,
yeah, that one was a bit.
It
scary.
Cut someone off a little bit. Yeah. Well, the other thing that it couldn't do too is like if you're trying to turn right into a road that has three lanes and the person in the lane closest to you is kind of in the way and you need to like go a little left to go around them to get to the lane next to them when there's no traffic coming, it wouldn't do that for us. Jaren had to take control to go a little bit left so he could go right.
It also got quite confused on like it was a two lane road, and then the right lane was ending, and it was just ending to a right turn only. The car got super confused by that. It kept on trying to turn into that right lane to pass. And speaking of passing, I have no idea why it decides to suddenly pass a car. Like every once in a while, I'm just like going 60 when the speed limit's 70, and it doesn't pass. And other times, I'm going like 70 behind a car, and the speed limit is like 65, and it decides to. All right, I'm going to pass now.
Enough of this.
Wonder how it figures that out.
Yeah, yeah. And
got the musk id.
It also has trouble with road conditions. Like if there's a pothole or a rough road, it doesn't care about that. So like I said,
so it just rolls fast over the problems and
Does it
use road markings to navigate still?
It does, yeah. So it can see like stoplights. It can see construction cones,
but the paint on the thing. Yeah. There's an article that came across from Business Insider that was about the 2018 death of a guy who was using a full auto self auto drive. So it's years ago that was. I wonder if they changed it. But basically, Tesla's self driving mode was using road markings to make turns and changes. So like. That would make sense. They just deposed one of the engineers, and he, under oath, said that yeah, it was using road markings like the lanes and the dotted lines and the
yeah, it uses that. Like you can see on the display when there's a dotted line and when there isn't.
Right.
Like it even tried to pass a car on a dotted lane. I'm like, nope, I'm not having you do this.
Because if it's got the small dotted lane for like a
two way road,
road. Oh, it tried to pass. Yeah. I'm like, this is running out soon. I'm just taking over.
Yeah.
So like it's a very nice tool. Like we went to Canyonlands. It's a national park here in Utah. And
is that what it is?
Other people not from Utah. It's not a well trodden national park. You big butt.
I love national parks.
Anyway, so I wanted to see the sights, and I just put on full self driving, and I was kind of looking around. It was cool.
Oh.
That is
cool. That's terrifying. Scary. It feels like bungee jumping to me, or
nah. Bungee jumping has a higher survival rate, I think.
Like, you get used to how it drives, so you start to instinctually understand, like, okay, it could do okay in this situation. Canyonlands, it was pretty slow driving, and, you know, I didn't feel worried about that, and it worked out pretty well.
That's a national park, Lando.
You get,
is that what it is?
Canyonlands.
Mm-hmm. It's less busy than most of the ones in Utah, too.
Could you name a national park in North Carolina? I couldn't.
I don't think there is one in North Carolina.
There is, you jerk. Oh.
North Carolina, no national parks. It's on their license plates.
It's on their license plate. There's none.
The land of no national parks.
10 great national parks in North Carolina. All right. Appalachian National Scenic Trail.
Boom.
Blue Ridge There's Parkway. 10 of them?
Great Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, Great Smoky Mountains. See, Lando, this is helpful information for people who aren't from Utah.
Well, you could say, no. If you would have said the national park, I'd be like, yeah, I know that's a national park. Not
what?
Where it was.
What?
If you would have said, never mind.
Anyway, full self-driving, it costs like $14,000 if you want to unlock it.
Oh my goodness.
You got it on trial right now or something?
Got it on trial for a month. You can also pay a monthly subscription fee. I think it's like $200 or so. I wouldn't pay either of those. Like, for a road trip, that's still too expensive for me.
That is like, so you wouldn't much. Even rent it for a road trip, like, if you were going to go somewhere?
No, I wouldn't, because, like, when I'm on a road trip and I'm in the car, I get bored. And at least driving is something to do, you know?
Mm.
There's sometimes where I'm like, I used it more in the last 2 weeks just so I could review it than I normally would, but even then, coming back from Moab, I'm like, I don't feel like using it right now. I'm just going to drive. So if it were like a quarter or a fifth the price, I might do it. But as it stands right now, I don't think it's worth it.
14's a big ask, I think.
It is.
That's
and
a lot of money.
The system has to be getting better. I mean, why else would they open this trial up for everyone? They're probably just getting data so they can improve on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's fair.
So like maybe 5 or 6 years from now, when that 98% turns to 99.9%, maybe I'd be more compelled, but at this point, not
and
so
the other,
much.
The other thing, too, to keep in mind is the more self-driving cars we have on the road, the better the self-driving cars are going to be, because they won't have to deal with the erratic human drivers. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It felt erratic.
Well, I'm saying
it's only erratic because it's trying to match erratic, right?
Exactly.
It's trying to compute erratic. When you take that erratic behavior out, then the self-driving cars do a lot better.
And
plus it will factor in that it'll have that much more years of data to go off of to build its models. So.
It will park for you too. So like you could tap on a parking space on the screen and it'll auto park for you. It also do parallel parking for you. I tried both and it's not a very good parker. I thought the parallel parking would be pretty good, but it did worse than I would, which was surprising. And like the way
that is surprising.
The way it parks in a normal spot, it saves all of the turns to get into the spot, like in a nice straight manner, till the very last second. It's like, that's not how I would do it, but okay.
Scary.
Yeah. So anyway, at this point,
better put some curb feelers on that.
6.5, 7 out of 10.
Okay. The fact that it exists alone in the manner that it does is still pretty impressive.
Yeah, but yeah.
Definitely don't believe Elon when every year he says it's coming this year.
Like,
of course not.
Like I said, I was genuinely impressed for what it could do. Yeah. But once the novelty wore off, I'm like, will I actually use this?
Sure.
Probably not, because it's not 100% there yet.
All right. Well, there you go. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. That's our time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Big shout out to our awesome Patreon backers, patreon.com/helpdeskarcade. If you feel like donating. If you donate $6 a month or more, you get a shout out on the air, among other neat things like the In-Between, which is coming up, and access,
they can get spicy.
Oh, and access to the Patreon channel on our Discord. Jaren has our $6 or higher tier people right now to shout out.
Thank you, Dave, to David Broshinsky, Connor Keeson, Wiffleball Tony. Wiffleball Tony responded to my question last week.
He's still there.
Are you still there? Yes, he is. Thank you, Wiffleball Tony. Jason Eatman, K Onda Carnal, Lamborghini, Andy Bird, Be the 8-Year-Old, Tony the Home Theater Geek, Travis Johnson, Buy Geek Show Arcade Help Desk stickers at Pie Man Graphics on Etsy. All proceeds go to Lee George K's medical bills. Jeremy, No Name No Color, Keslo, Eric Stein, and Eric Cruz, the in-between rating, plus 69.
Yeah. Wow.
Nice. Matt Nelson, Harry Patch, Adam, Aaron Faulkner, Stuart Lloyd. History is there for you to learn from or repeat. Your choice. Ryan M. and Adam Hecht. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Is that working? There it goes. Okay. That's it for this week. We will see you next week or perhaps on the Geek Show Arcade if you decide to listen to that. But until then, Lando, take us out.
You know, the best way to put a request in for the help desk is to, you know, first, be as vague as possible, and number two, do it at 4:55 p.m. on a Friday. Be an end user.